Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate and I'm here with my co-host Amanda. Today, we are talking about awakening and war. We had a different topic that we were going to discuss today, but this feels really present and really important to talk about right now. We want to discuss this notion of war and the idea that war, politics, and spirituality go together. And this is truly part of the awakening that we are going through right now. It is relevant. It is connected. In this episode, we're going to be looking at the illusion of war, how we've been fed a narrative to consent to war, the impacts on soldiers and society, and our roles in influencing the end of world wars. We want to ask, can peace spread faster than propaganda if we choose not to participate in the illusion? Amanda, such an interesting topic, timely topic, something that feels like it's just been shoved in our faces this week. Like we keep saying every other day it's something else, and this one felt like we just kind of got off the back of one thing and now we're talking about war and it's escalating quite quickly. Do you want to start by introducing to us where this idea came from for you, because this was sparked by something that you saw, and set the stage for our conversation today?
Sure. And before I dive in, I just want to mention that we are recording this on Tuesday, June 17th. This will probably be published a bit later, but just want to put the timestamp on it because that's where our frame of reference is. Things might be different by the time this is published.
Yeah.
As things are moving very fast in our world. So honestly, I was eating dinner prior to about 30 minutes prior to us going to record. Like Kate said, we were going to discuss something different. And I was scrolling on YouTube and I came across this community post by a YouTuber who is a former, I believe, Navy SEAL. His name is Sean Ryan. He has a very big following. You may or may not know who he is, but basically the post said this: I've fought in enough fake wars. I think I'll sit this one out. I'll bet upwards of 99% of the people that fought with me share the same sentiment. And I did scroll a bit more. I didn't read all the comments because I needed to get ready for this conversation. But the first one I read was quite long, and it was a parent of someone whose child was raised to honor the military, the United States, and they encouraged a path pursuing a military path. And then their child ended up going to war in either Iraq or Afghanistan. And they now regret pushing their child down that path. And it got me thinking how the collective, the consciousness is shifting. Now, Kate is Australian. I'm from the United States. And so she, you know, we have different conditioning in terms of what we were exposed to by our governments and our media. But she probably, you might be aware, Kate, of what the U.S. is about, but it's very much about pushing war. And so that has been part of the collective consciousness in the United States for a long time, even after Vietnam. There's still been a faction of people who supports military and war and intervention. And I think what triggered in my mind is this time going to be different? Is this war going to have the same support as previous wars, as what happened in early 2000s when, you know, there was this big event that catalyzed support for going into the Middle East. And I think if people have looked at what has transpired over the years in those supposed wars, if you've looked carefully, you'll see that we were very much lied to about the reasons why we were going to war. And there was so much death and destruction and unnecessary brutality and violence in the world. And we're going to dive into some of the consequences of what we were doing there. And I would say, are we in a better place? I asked the question, are we in a better place from doing that? And are we going to blindly follow our quote unquote leaders? Let's challenge that notion. But how I see this is an opportunity to do things differently than we've done in the past. And I'm hoping that I'm sensing that people are not going to be on board like they were in early 2000s when this whole cascade of events started in the Middle East. To for what cause? If anyone can tell me what the real reasons were in the comments, I'm interested to know.
That's my rant. And you know, just to start there, like, you know, yes, I'm from Australia, and you know, not primarily living by what happens in the US. However, it always has an effect on other countries. My uncle went to the Vietnam War and has suffered the ill consequences of that. My dad's, you know, accounts, he's not the same person, and he is a very challenging human to be around because of what he experienced, and he never came back the same. So I also have a cousin who served 5 tours in Iraq, through the Australian. And unfortunately for him as well, the PTSD has been something that he's had to work through for many, many years. It was also part of the breakdown of his marriage and things like that as well. So, you know, America's choices affect a lot of people as well. So for those listening in the US, like, it spreads out everywhere and touches many, many people, many, many places. So yeah, I think it's always been for me as an Australian, like, what happens in the US, it does have such a massive ripple effect on our country and certain things that happen. So yeah, it's always part of something so much bigger. And I think, you know, speaking to it now, I personally can remember, you know, back again when America went to war with Iraq, and being, I think, in my early teens and thinking, oh wow, you know, I didn't think I would ever see a war again in my time, but here we are. They had this thing happening there. I think it was weapons of mass destruction then, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that was the supposed reason.
Yeah.
There were none.
Yeah. And, you know, being young back then, you're like, okay, you know, this is happening. We've got to do this. It's a scary time. And then when I think about that to now, it's just been like this constant, like, you know, slow progression of like ramping things up to, you know, well, I've always seen it as America just wants to get its fingers in somewhere and its hands on the pie. You know, it's just an outside observation. But interestingly, I haven't tapped into much of this one that's happening now, because through my own awakeness, like, I don't want to participate in that story. And, you know, we talk about the avoidance of not looking at the dark, but however, it's also like, this to me just feels like another ploy for our attention, for our consent, for our fear, for our, you know, rallying around, like, this is wrong and we have to get the bad guys. And yet I think what we really want to pack today is that there's so much happening so fast right now. We're really waking up to all of this stuff. That can we potentially, this time round, with enough of us becoming to this place of seeing things as they are, choose to opt out of this narrative and this another attempt for the powers that be to, I don't even know, what are they doing? What are we doing this for? Like, what is the grab here, you know?
That's an interesting question, Kate, because why? Like,
yeah,
there's stories. I mean, we can go into the details about what we know and we don't know, but unless there is a false flag that to rally people around. I don't understand why people would be supporting this, because there, from my perspective, there's been no real reason why we would support this, why we would do this. So it's interesting to hear like how the U.S. has impacted you, your family members in particular, right? Mm-hmm. Like the reach of the U.S. empire is far and wide and deep. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sad that, you know, and as someone that, you know, I was studying abroad in Chile in 2004 during the Iraq War, and it was like people there were more aware of what was going on in the United States. They're aware of what's going on with U.S. politics than I think most people in the United States were aware of any other country, because what you said is true. It's like what happens, what the U.S. does reaches far and wide and really deep. And so I think, you know, you touched on PTSD, and that's what I'm wondering. Have people been so affected by the last 20 years? Is it enough for people to say no? Is it enough for people to see behind the illusion, what's being attempted to be sold to us? After 2020, are people believing the government? Is there trust there? And, you know, something that I just learned this, I want to say in the past 2 weeks, was that, you know, I always thought it was about oil. And like that was the reason I thought it was about. But what I learned, and you mentioned you've heard of this, but maybe the people listening haven't heard this as well, that the U.S. was actually protecting poppy fields in Afghanistan. You know, moving on from Iraq. Now, you know, we did Iraq. Now let's move on to Afghanistan. The U.S. soldiers were protecting poppy fields there. Mm-hmm. And the largest poppy fields in the world are in Afghanistan, one of the places with the largest poppy fields. And then what happened? I'll let you share what happened after we went into Afghanistan.
So the UN reports that during the 2000s, it showed there was a massive increase in opium production after the US invasion into Afghanistan, not a decrease. In the year 2000, the Taliban had nearly eradicated opium farming as a religious policy, reducing production by 90%. And after the US invasion in 2001, poppy production skyrocketed. And the US Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction repeatedly reported corruption and the failure of the $8 billion spent on counter-narcotics efforts.
And so we have since experience in the United States and maybe in other parts of the world. I don't want to speak to, but I don't know specifically, but in the United States, there is an opium epidemic. Mm-hmm. And once, as I heard it and as I understand it, that, you know, fentanyl is a synthetic opium. And so conveniently, the U.S. left Afghanistan when real opium was no longer needed, because there's a synthetic version. They've come up with a synthetic version. And so how many people have been ravaged by the effects of, number one, going to war, being forever altered? How can you be the same human being after seeing what happens in war, after either killing people or having people close to you die? You're in constant fear of being killed, or you have serious injuries from combat. And then to come back and to see, imagine you were responsible for protecting poppy fields, and then to see what's happened to the people of your country in terms of addiction and death due to the substances that you helped protect in the name of freedom. I mean, I would imagine that that's a pretty sad and hard pill to swallow as far as something, the sacrifice that people have made for so-called that the values of they thought were goodness. And so to me, that has to be a huge awakening, right? To have that illusion of the so-called reasons of why you're doing something to be shattered, to see the reality of how things have played out in the past 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there was something that we read, and I was just trying to find it, but I couldn't find it. You know, even firsthand accounts from US soldiers that were there that have been reporting what they are actually doing over there. And then the sort of conflict for themselves of understanding why they were doing it. And, you know, it's one thing to just be hired security. It's another thing to be in a war zone, you know, and the impacts that's having on you. To then feel then betrayal, I think, when you realize what this was fueling and what it was for and how you put your life on the line for that. And was that something you were aligned with? And I think that's a big piece of where we are at the moment. And this, you know, incredible quote from this guy is that he's, you know, not, he's seen enough, fought enough fake wars. I think I'll sit this one out. Like, that's spoken from deeply embedded experience of what is really going on, you know, and is it, you know, I feel for these people who are wanting to be patriotic, wanting to be of service, wanting to defend and protect something they love, their country, their families, their friends, and yet they're being put into these positions under the false story that this is what we're protecting, this is who we're fighting, this is where we're why we're fighting them, this is why these people must die, to only then find out that they were just a pawn in a larger political game, and, you know, potentially even in this situation to benefit Big Pharma. Like, how must they feel right now? And then, I mean, is this something they're able to consider in a deeper layer for their own awakening, their own healing of why they, not only just the trauma of being at war, but so maybe there's something deeply, much more deeply embedded in their journey of healing to understand, like, some of that disconnect or that, you know, that they've felt and experienced really is that the crime didn't match the punishment kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, that they were, mm-hmm. what they were doing, there was a sort of that moral compass of, like, I mean, to kill anyone anyway, and like, how do you do that? But when you find like you did it for political gain or for not the reasons that you were told, like, it must be soul destroying, you know, like how do you live with yourself when you feel that you followed these leaders or, you know, people you've invested your trust into and then given your life to serve? How must that feel? And how, no wonder they suffer what they suffer, you know, aside from the atrocities that they see and experience and the loss of friends and things like that. And then, you know, maybe even parts of their own bodies. So, you know, with what we're going through right now, there's this sort of, you know, potential for what we're seeing here with this, what was his name? Sean Ryan speaking out to saying, like, I opt out. What happens if more and more soldiers start to say, I opt out. I don't align to this fight. I don't see why we should be in it. What are we doing this for? What happens when that happens? What happens when we as the societies and the collective say, what are we doing this for? Let's really start to explore some of that of, like, you know, what happens when we do that?
Well, we see who has the power, actually, because it's not the people in power only there because they have bodies behind them. And I don't mean to minimize all the people, but really, you know, I've been listening to some things and it's like, well, Israel can't fight this war without the USA. And it's interesting because it's like, well, isn't Israel very powerful? They are, because they have the, it's like the number of humans that we have supporting that can support this venture, the military industrial complex that's been built up, you know, without it, they can't fight this war, or they can, but they're not going to be the winners. And so, well, Let's challenge the belief that we're required to go to war for another country, number one. I don't understand why that is the case. But yeah, we get to see if people start reclaiming. I'm not going to blindly follow any elected official, even if I voted for them. I'm not going to blindly follow them to my potential death, mm-hmm. to the potential destruction of your country. Because let's face it, if Trump does, I'm not trying to get political here, but if Trump does go to war for another country, that is quite the opposite of what he ran on in terms of his whole making America great again spiel, because this is not going to make America great again to go send our young people mm-hmm. to go fight a war, potentially a war that, you know, we think we act like we're tough. We act like we can just win it. No, we were in war for many, many years when we started on the timeline of Iraq. It wasn't just like we got in and we demolished them and we were out.
Yeah.
So it's a choice of do you want to go where this is going? And so it's an opportunity for each individual to reclaim their power, to no longer give it away to this entity that maybe they believed had their best interests at heart. But that's a bit of awakening as well. As look at the history of the past 20 years, 40 years, 50 years, and going back to Vietnam, has this government had the best interests of its people at heart?
Yeah. Yeah. And my husband says it all the time, like wars make money. Wars make money. You know, people have to get, you're going to build it back in the day, especially, you know, in the old wars. You had to create industry, you had to create weapons, and money's going into the economy. And like, it makes money. It's a war as a machine. It's a money making machine. Yeah. And it's also absolutely devastating. You know, but war is destabilizing, you know, and again, being an outsider looking in to think about how that would affect the US as well. Like, you start throwing your, as you say, young people, generation, right? You've got a whole layer of your society here going to war, which could be, and I don't know why, but it could just be, and it will be likely if it goes ahead, like catastrophic, like thousands and thousands of people dying for what? Dying for what? How does that benefit the US really? How does losing your population, your young, dedicated, you know, whole like set subset there of like a section of society to go fight for a war that isn't even your fight to be part of, right? Like why are they there? Then, you know, as that escalates, if we're talking about more young people from other countries that then go in to support, right? Why, what are we doing here to society? It's destabilizing. And once again, it's this force that shakes up the fabric of society. You know, the kind of connection points, we start taking people away, they die, that creates trauma within the family units. There's loss, there's grief that they can't overcome. You know, it's like, again, it's just such a, it's not just the fight that they're actually in. It's such a war on every other part of society as well. And like, why would we say yes to that? Why would we say yes to more trauma within the home, more trauma within individuals, more trauma to then just watch on the TV? Like, what are we doing this for? This is, it's such a question to be asking. And like, for everyone, soldier, someone at home, someone with children, you know, like, do we consent to this? Do we want this? What happens when we start to say no? You know, it takes courage and bravery to stand up and say no, especially those are the ones that are being asked to do the fighting. But I'm sure within the hearts of hearts of many of those people, they're screaming inside saying no as well. What does that mean when we push back on the government and say, no, we're not going to do that? How can we shift this to, I think, and it's a big movement, but awaken more and more people to see that fighting isn't the answer. It does not solve anything here. And who are we doing this for and why are we doing it? Like, it's a question. We've got to ask it. Why are they asking us to do this? Do we really want it? And I think if you speak to not even just the Americans, but every other set of societies in every other country underneath the governments that ask them, do you want war? more people don't want it than the ones that do. You know, yes, okay, we've got factions and we've got terrorists and we've got things and people who do crazy shit. But is this the solution? No. What are we doing this for? I mean, it just makes me so goddamn mad because, again, the generational impact it has, it just keeps feeding the trauma back down the line, right? The child loses the father, then they want to fight, but then, you know, it's just keeping it going. How do we stop this? You know, and that's the big piece. Like, what do we need to do to be able to stop war altogether? We talk about this a lot. We've mentioned it in the last few episodes. Like, we've got to look inward. How do we hold trauma within ourselves? How can we begin to heal these things of like the separation and seeing others as bad or, you know, the fear and ask, I think, that big question of like, how is this serving anybody? You know, what are our other options here? And if the governments aren't going to do it, like, how do we rally together as the ones being the most affected with our family members and our friends and our children or our, you know, parents, depending where we are in the structure of the family, being so grossly affected by this? And how is this really taking us anywhere good?
Very good questions, Kate. Very good questions. And they're serious questions and they're important questions. And the trajectory of, like you said, right now, it's like, I think the fear of nuclear war has been used for, you know, many decades, right?
Yeah.
Ever since, you know, you live very close to where the effects of those bombs were felt. And I'm sure it probably still, the ramifications are not probably over from what happened there. And, but there, the weaponry we have today are, as I understand it, is so much stronger than what they dropped back then, right? Yeah. And it was just devastation back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if people, it might be too late if we allow, like, okay, we're just going to go in for a normal war. And no, this is where it can go. Like, this is where it can end.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It could wipe out, it could cause huge destruction of our planet.
Yeah.
If this moves forward, and, you know, and guess what? It could also come to the US soil as well. And so it's playing with fire, and it's not going to end well if people don't start choosing something different. So I'm just going to share here that.
Can I just say something before you do?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to speak to what you just said there, like here in Japan and the bombs that were dropped here. I've been to both the places, Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and seen the memorials that they have there and the photos and footage and leftover clothing and the burnt artifacts and the melting and all of it. And if anyone ever just can go and see it, if every human saw that, even if the political leaders could come and see that, it's going to make me emotional. You wouldn't drop. You wouldn't even think about it. You wouldn't even joke about it. You wouldn't even provoke another person or another country with one when you see what it did. And as you said, that was the first one. And the development of what they have done since then is it's so much more powerful. And there was this horrifying map of on one of them, I think it was in Nagasaki. It's this big wall. And it's a timeline from when the first one was dropped to today. And you would think after anyone saw what it did that you just would can that and move on. But no, that shows the amount of bombs that were tested and developed over the years. And they've got the little tiny like bomb symbol and like rows of 10. And it goes from like, you know, the following year, 6 more were tested, and then 50, then 100, to thousands and thousands more. We didn't learn a single thing back then. No one. They just went, oh, how do we make this better? How do we make it more destructive? People, no one truly understands. If one of those things went off, it's not a joke. It's no joke. And it's not going to be isolated. It's going to be, you know, one of the most sobering things in the world. And if one goes off, you can't possibly let another one go off, because we can't joke about those things. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and yes, as you said, the effects are still felt today. Like, people suffered. Like, it was just horrifying. Like, Yeah. You know,
the consciousness, not just the consciousness, but the, you know, the imprint that imprint that was probably bestowed upon the whole country, I imagine, not even just the people that were experienced it, but to, to know someone, to be so close to it.
Yeah. And I'll say too, because of that, they said, we will never develop them as a country and we will fight for peace. And you come here and it is that, you know, I mean, unfortunately they had to experience the effects of that, but their reaction to that is, we will never want to participate in the development of such technology and we choose peace.
Yes. I don't want to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to like open the frustration that I have for my country, because I have a lot of like anger and about what my country is deep down. At its core, and what it's done, the role it's played in the world, right? It's the bully. I don't know what other people around the world think of people from the United States, but if I were from another country and I was just witnessing the role that the US plays in the destruction, I mean, I was researching yesterday about the number of bombs that US has dropped just since Iraq. It's in the hundreds of thousands of bombs that the US has dropped. And to me, it's like, that is creating hatred in this world. If you had a family member that was killed at the hands of another country, that is not like a normal response. Is that is unjust. Yes. That is. And so the effect of this is radicalizing people to cultivate hate towards another country. And that's something that we as a human race needs to wake up to.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is all part of the awakening process, because how do the American people allow this to happen? It's like we are sedated with consumerism and
shitty food,
Hollywood, shitty food,
medication,
just all the things that the hustle, the grind, the stress, right? It keeps us numb. And how can you worry? You know, people are just trying to get by and it's happening in another part of the world. But it's in a way, it's like the blood is on our hands too. I mean, if you think back to, we'll say Nazi Germany, it's like there was a reckoning for the German people, even for the ones that weren't involved, because it's like, you let your government do this, and it's through apathy that we are allowing this to happen around the world. And it has been going on for a long time. And this right now is a moment where it's getting, you know, it's coming to a head right now. And that's the energetics, right? I think where we are in this time and place in our evolution is like, it's coming to a point where people need to wake up and say no, otherwise it's going to get really bad. This is how I feel. Like, that's 100%. The energy I feel.
Yes. I mean, and that's why we're talking about it today, is because this is a spiritual situation. This war and politics is, because it is such a powerful and a huge part of this awakening that we're all going through. And this to me is like a big play for power. And it's a big opportunity for us to reclaim it, ours, you know, because there is a potential there'll be no world here for us, you know, literally. You know, another statistic is that the number of atomic weapons that exist could literally just blow up the whole planet. That we do not need that many of them you only need left a couple, but there's thousands and thousands of them, right? So we got to go beyond just thinking that it's just one side shooting at another, like, or feeling like it doesn't have anything to do with us, which is something, being on the outside, you know, it's not my country until it is, you can, right? But it's not just Americans that need to take this stance and speak up. Like, we all have to be thinking about what is the larger consequence here if we don't say anything, if we allow these things to continue. And then it expands out into more and more parts of the world. But right now, the big one that's being asked for us to see is this. This is the scream. This is, like, to me, it's just like, you know, the scream of voices that the potential. It's there. What do we want to do about that? It's in our face. We have got power. We have our choice is power. Our awareness is power. Our sense of, you know, fear and reclaiming that is our power. You know, where we let our minds go, our emotions, how do we funnel? And we think, like I said this last week, that energy we feel into powerful action. How do we rally together? Because when we're stronger together, like we can say no to this. It's going to feel like an uphill battle and they're going to feel small and insignificant, but we're not. You know, that is how we change things. We have to reclaim our power. We have to take our power back. We have to say that we don't choose that fight because none of us choose this fight. It gets fought for us. We get told we're going to be in these fights. Like, who chooses that? Nobody wants it, but we don't say anything. And so then that leads me to a question of like, how do we do this? How do we start to reclaim our power and voice our no in a way that we can affect change? Like, what do you think? Because, I mean, you know, we're saying that. We're saying it. Yeah. How do we do it?
I think number one, we stop being quiet, right? Yeah. I think, like you said, it's easy to kind of sit on the fence. It's like, oh, we're a podcast, for us in particular, we're a podcast about spiritual awakening. We don't need to talk about this. But we are choosing to speak about it because this is a war of our consciousness. This is not a physical war. It's like, if the masses do not support this, we have been convinced through the conditioning that we are small and insignificant, that what we want does not matter. That has been our conditioning through all the ways we have interacted with society, right? We're unconsciously programmed that we don't make a difference. We can't really say. But speaking to just one other person plants a seed, and it has a ripple effect. This is like a quantum. It can have a quantum potential if we all start acting differently, if we choose not to stay silent, and if we impact one person by this podcast, we did something. If you feel what we're saying is important, share this with someone who you think needs to hear it. If you agree with this, share it, because it's through staying silent that we are controlled.
Yeah.
And that's what they're counting on, because they're really good at keeping us quiet. They're really good at implanting ways of shutting people down. You're this if you don't go along with this thing that we want to happen, right? So if we want to change things, we need to stop playing that game. We need to no longer accept these stories and these narratives of what it means to speak and have a say and take a stance. And, you know, I think we can do it in a way that we're not combative. You know, that's not creating more division.
Yeah.
And I think that we're for peace. We're not for more destruction. And I think this is an issue that might bring people together, actually. Like, it has the potential for people from both sides to say, this is not what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. I think we have to stop fighting each other and start like questioning together. And, you know, forget about what other people are going to think for you speaking a truth, speaking your heart, speaking from your humanity and your care and your perspective, our future. Like, we have to get vocal and we have to send that message. And I keep wanting to ask the question, what about protests? But I think they can, it's to me, there's a challenge with that. It has to stay peaceful. Otherwise, we're just perpetuating the problem. I think there's got to be a new way for us to do this. There's something amiss with the protests. I don't know what it is, but I haven't got a solution to that answer. But I think something important that you said there too is like, when we get labeled something for having an opinion. We had a conversation before this call, just even talking about soldiers who opt out, and or if they're within the, you know, within a fight and they decide that they want to leave, dishonorable discharge. how loaded is that label of their choice to say no. Like, no wonder there's shame and they make you second guess saying no to the fight, right? What a horrible way to label you listening to your humanity, you saying, I physically, mentally, emotionally cannot take this anymore. I don't want to fight your fight. It's not my fight. And it's dishonorable discharge. I may be getting the definition of that, you know, narrowing that down a little, but no wonder, right? Like, look how loaded that is. We have to forget that. Who gives a shit, right? You've got to listen to yourself, your moral compass, your intuition, your knowing, and we have to speak out about it, because if we don't, if we continue down this path, there could be potentially very devastating consequences. And I mean, get on a plane, come to Japan, go down south and just visit those memorials, and, you know, you will not be able to not use your voice. You can't leave those places the same human that entered. Like, it's just not possible. And unfortunately, I see these words and threats thrown around like it's just like, I'll just push the button. Like, you can't joke about that stuff. You can't. They really can't. And don't think it's funny, because it's not. And don't think that it's a great threat tactic, because if someone actually did it, we can't take that back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think what I felt when I read this graphic that triggered this whole conversation is that this is an opportunity for the people, that the soldiers, essentially, like, that is where this can end. If people are willing to not fight. And so if the soldiers felt that the people were behind them in this choice, if soldiers believed that the honorable thing to do is to not fight, I think that's needed. And then what just popped in is like, okay, so what, how do they get people to rally around these wars in the past? And it's to do a false flag. And so what we need to do is learn how to be discerning of what's to come, because recognizing that these tactics are used to rally support. Right now, I imagine there is not a lot, the majority of people do not support this. Number one, because that's why the majority of people voted for Donald Trump, because they didn't want any more foreign intervention. And so, but people are very emotional. And that's how they get consent. They manufacture consent by creating an event. And, it was this group and they did it for this reason. And if you go back and you look at what happened in 9/11, I've shared on this podcast before how I was 19 and I knew that there was something off about it. I could feel the motives behind what was being done. Oh, you're either for, you know, it was all this wording of you're either with us or you're against us. And it was this rally to go towards something. I remember I went to Spain, and when my dad picked me up at the airport, and I remember him telling me that war was declared. And I was like, yep, I knew that was going to happen. And they've done it. And I'm hoping that people are more aware. And thankfully we have independent media, which we did not, you know, things are so different than 2001, 2003, when 9/11 happened, when we went to war with Iraq. And so there are voices out there that can speak without being kicked off a news network, like what happened. I think it was Phil Donahue in 2003, and he was speaking up against the Iraq war. And I believe he got kicked off, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And so we don't only just have these news networks that control the media and the propaganda. And so if you're not believing what I'm saying, if for some reason you think that, you know, do your own research, like, honestly, seek out multiple voices on a topic, really dig deep about what has happened over the last 20 years. And, you know, if see, can you really conscious, like in your conscious, like support this after seeing what's happened over mm-hmm. the last 20 years, 20 plus years? And I think that, you know, most people are, a lot of people are, you know, quite busy. They're, and that's part of the mechanism to keep us unaware is to not even give us time, but we all have the information that we can see what's going on if we choose to. And so there's really, if we choose to, we can make time to understand what's going on and choose something different.
Yeah. I just think too, you know, like when we talk about standing up, saying no, if the soldiers were the ones to say no and us being there to support that choice, right? That's got to be, that's us coming together, right? Because it's really there, then they, you know, if as a hypothetical, they were to turn around and just say no, like they need our support on that and to feel backed. And it just made me think then, you know, like that many people may think, but what if we don't have anyone to defend us? Like we have to examine this fear of being attacked. Why do we think we're going to be attacked? Who's provoking someone to want to attack us, right? Like that's not our doing. That's not society's doing. That's not the average family, the average human out there provoking another country, you know, or, you know, taking sides or whatever, right? Why do we fear being attacked? Why do we fear we have to defend ourselves? Of course, I understand that, you know, especially in America, but it's getting worse and worse in Australia too. Within our own homes, we do have to defend ourselves, and that unfortunately society is breaking down. And so, you know, people break into people's homes, there's violence and things like that. But where does that all stem from? Like, why does that even exist? Right? It's a part of the larger picture that there's this, you know, like such a funneling of energy into war that could be funneled into healing so that even in our own homes, we can feel safe and we don't have to feel like we have to defend ourselves from anyone. You know, it's one of the greatest joys of living in Japan is the peace that exists here and safety. It is insanely safe. I feel like I don't know how I could ever move anywhere else because I'm ruined by how safe it is. But literally, I can drive down to the 7-Eleven to pay my bills, leave my car running with my keys in the car, my wallet sitting in the car, my phone, come back and it's all there. I can drop my wallet out the front of the 7-Eleven. It will get returned to me with all the cash. I've had guests, you know, when we had the hotel here, leave expensive cameras on the public train and someone handed it in to the conductor. The conductor then put it on the next train, sent it back to the train station. On a public bus, their wallet full of cash got picked up with all the cash in it. It's insane here. People are honest. They give a shit about each other. And that's what it is. They are taught when they're young to be considerate of people in their classrooms, their environment. They clean their own classrooms in kindergarten. They wash up. They pick up garbage. The family unit's tight. You know, there's this constant thinking about the other person, how your actions affect them, you know, even to the point that you're quiet after 10 p.m. and you don't mow your lawn before 7. You know what I mean? Like it's ingrained into society to consider your neighbors. It doesn't mean they get along and they're all friendly and people don't feel jealous of each other. That still exists, but inherently, you know, it's safe here. Consider it. It is possible. Japan is an example. Yes, there's still scratch the surface and there's dysfunction, but I mean, we're humans, right? There's a shadow in everything, but it is possible to live in a society where we can all get along and live in a harmony and a sense of safety. And that is by not provoking and picking fights with people and doing the work to say, well, let's shift the narrative. Let's shift the belief. Let's shift the way that we choose to live with each other. So, you know, it is possible. It's happening here. So again, come visit Japan and see how it can work. And then take that experience that you have here home to your own country and implement it into your own family and your own environment. And I say, you know, see that happen so many times with people who would come and visit at the hotel and, you know, see somebody acting out, usually from Australia, being an Australian, being like they are back home in Australia, and then feeling the shame of that and saying, but why would you come here to this beautiful place and act like that? You know, they take home these great values of consideration and kindness and thoughtfulness, and they're different from the experience, just from having a short holiday here, you know? So I wanted to say that to implant the fact that it's not a crazy notion that we're kind of saying that things could change and things could be different and we could live in a new way where we don't have to fear each other or fear others. It's completely possible and it happens here in this country, you know. So a sense of hope, I want to plant that it's a real thing that exists.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that, you know, going back to the historical experience in your country and the response to it, it's like the cycle of violence can be, I was traumatized and therefore I'm going to be the aggressor. I'm going to defend because mm-hmm. I need to. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you can have that horrific thing happen and mm-hmm. decide that we're going to be more evolved human beings.
Yeah.
I will add that while there is violence where I live in Mexico, I will say that something that I've noticed and experienced and observed compared to my experience in the United States is that division and independence, you know, there's something I like about the independence in the United States, but it is to an extreme. Also, you know, as we've talked about the destruction of the fabric of society is eroding. And with that, the family structures have eroded over time. And here in Mexico, the family is intact and neighbors look out for each other. And so I think a lot of the crime here, it's either cartels. I mean, it's nothing I've experienced, but I've heard about it in the, you know, news and such. Or it's due to poverty, right? Like there is poverty. It's not all poverty here, but I think the violence that you see is a result of that. But you don't see homeless people like is an epidemic in the United States. Mm. Because you take care of your family members, right? Like don't allow your mentally unwell family member to wander the streets, or you don't throw them out on the streets. Mm. I mean, I'm sure that happens, but generally it's minuscule compared to what's happening in the United States. And so there is something to be said about the relationships and you know, you get on the bus and it's like you move for the elderly person or the pregnant lady. Mm-hmm. You know, the children are taught that. And so there is this like fabric of society that we can instill the values that we value into. We can live that way. We can respect other human beings and how we live and we can think about them. Yep. Something just popped in my head is like, you know, in the United States, it's like everyone has a car. Like it's not built to where you can get by without a car. And we've lived without a car for, I guess, like 4 years now. We haven't had a car. And so you interact with people in a way that you don't when you're insulated and isolated in a vehicle. So it's like that lack of human interaction that builds the compassion for others and to think beyond yourself is something I think that is cultivated over time. And there's just all these things in the way that society is built in the United States. And you have this power structure that's wanting to keep people in fear. They want to create division to be on, so you're on the defense. I have to defend myself, or we have to defend ourselves from invaders. Like the question was like, why do we need to defend ourselves? Well, I think it's through the programming from the top, but it's also because when you're in a cycle of violence, when you're in a cycle of aggression and domination, if you harm other people, the response is going to be they're going to want to harm you back. And how does this change? I imagine it's like, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure how this cycle changed. It's like, I remember 5 years ago, I was at a yoga retreat and I had this download come in about how the United States changes, and it's through humility. It's through accepting its place on a more of an even playing field with the rest of the world, rather than it's like this like bombastic energy of like, we're the best, we dominate the world. And I have to say, it's a false illusion that it's the best. number one, and there are good things about it, but it's to overlook the rest of the world and negate. I mean, it's got good branding and marketing at the moment, which I think it's running off of. And so I saw it was like humility is what changes things. It's like we are, it's like it has to get knocked down maybe to like see that we can no longer be this bully, this enforcer around the world that tries to control and dominate the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an ego death, right?
It's Pluto in Aquarius.
Yeah. It's a looking at your actions. It's a looking at yourself. It's a looking at how have my patterns and choices been affecting the trajectory of my life. I'm talking about it from the, you know, perspective of the whole country and like the history and asking that bigger question of is this serving the my highest potential or not, and realizing where we're acting out of ego and an unhealthy expression of ego and power and maybe wounded feminine masculine, like that's the inner work of it, of the higher structure of the, you know, the country, of the ethos of the country. And you know, I think, you know, it's been spoken about that America as a country, or the United States as a country, is going through its own awakening. Right. There's a lot of astrology that the country in and of itself holds that says that it's going through its big dark night of the soul.
Isn't it Pluto return, I believe?
I think so, something. And
well, we're in the same, well, it's Pluto and Aquarius is what, when the country started, essentially, when the yes. revolution happened. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it hasn't yeah. been this way since then. And yeah. so if yeah. we are going through this transformation and
so
ego death feels not right.
And so, you know, like invitation for, you know, US listeners of, it's, you're part of that journey, you're part of that experience, and you know, big high level as a soul, you came to be an American citizen. What is your part in that piece of humility and compassion and, you know, empowering yourself to have a voice? Like it is in many ways, a big on the shoulders of many Americans, you know, to speak up, because such an influence of that government's power on many other countries and outside of that, you know, like even for Australians and everywhere else, governments are not much better. You know, I don't think there's a beautiful example of how to govern a country out there. But I think in general, like
Japan,
yeah, I mean, it has its issues, but. Yeah, I think, you know, across the globe, it is, we're seeing it, you know, even with Russia, you know, we know we don't want it, but it's time to really speak up about it, I think is the big piece. Like, you know, it's now more than ever, like, especially with what's happening right now and this week on Earth, it's imperative to really, really start to just be brave and bold and open and honest and vocal. Is what I want to finish with. As scary as that.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I think this conversation needed to happen this way, because I don't think it would have been easy for me to plan this conversation, but it's like when you feel called to speak,
yeah,
speak, right? Like I think I've stayed quiet about my opinions about my country for a long time. Yeah. And I think everything that we said is true, and that it's time for us to stand up. And because that's what this time is calling of us, no longer to look away, no longer to put our head in the sand and act like something terrible is not happening, you know, with our tax dollars specifically and in our name, and so let's not be manipulated by what is to come, by any big event that's going to be used to try to manipulate our emotions to get us to support this. Mm-hmm. Let's be discerning. Let's not just accept what they present to us at face value. Mm-hmm. And so that is going to, this is like a test. And are we going to pass it or are we not going to?
Mm-hmm. I was going to say two things, because it's not just that complicity to the war, it's everything that comes after it, all the other things that want to be rolled out and implemented in terms of security and safety afterwards, which will not be for our security and safety. It'll be for the agenda. And two, something that just keeps rolling around in my head the last few weeks is no one's coming to save me. I have to save myself. No one's coming to save us, right? Like if we wait for things to change, we'll just be waiting. And unfortunately, that choice to wait is also a choice to, it's basically just allowing things to roll out, right? We have to save ourselves. No one's coming to save us. It's our role. And like, just got to look within to say what is on my heart that wants to be expressed. You're not alone in what you feel. And the more that you share that, the more you're going to find that there's others out there that agree with your sentiment. And that is how we begin to change things.
I think that's a great spot to end this. Oh, thank you for having this conversation with me, because I think one that I probably have wanted to have for a long time, but I think it's when we're ready to speak.
Yeah.
So thanks
well,
for
thank you.
Holding the space.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. And thank you everyone for listening. We'll join you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform or to our YouTube channel so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. Be sure to head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, for the resources mentioned in this episode. Here, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.